I hope you have enjoyed both our guest speakers this last week. Evan talked about the fall of man last week and why everything doesn't work the way it should. We're just going to backtrack a little bit and go back to a passage before the fall. So if you want to turn to your Bibles, we're going to be looking at Genesis chapter 1, verse 31, all the way to chapter 2, verse 2. That'll be our text for this morning as we get there. And as we are getting there, I want to do two things. First of all, if you don't have a Bible, feel free to grab one. The blue ones in the pews in front of you are for you to take if you don't have your own. But the other thing I wanted you to know is when I was reading this passage, I was actually thinking about my favorite sport. Does anyone know what my favorite sport was? Ping pong. Close. I'm actually really bad at ping pong. Yeah. Hockey? No. You know what it is? It was track and field. How many of you like track and field? Nobody. All right. Well, the only reason that I like track and field was because it was the only thing that I was good at least I thought it was. And one day my dad introduced me to this movie. How many of you have heard of this movie before? Chariots of Fire. If you haven't heard of this movie, I'm not surprised. It came out when videotapes were considered new technology. But this movie centers around one of my favorite track and field heroes, which is real-life Olympian Eric Liddell, who in the Olympic Games of 1924 won the gold medal for the 400-meter relay. What the movie didn't show, though, is that his run was a world record run, and no one would be able to break it for the next 12 years. But the center of the movie really isn't Eric's Olympic or athletic challenge. Does anyone remember what the central plot line of this movie was? You wouldn't run on Sunday. The drama centers around his fastest event, which was the 100-meter dash. At that point in time, he was probably one of the fastest men in the world. And as a kid, I looked up to him because I loved track. And I thought, oh man, this is a really cool guy. Not only because he was an athlete, he ran the race that I wanted to run, and he was good at. He was also a really good Christian role model because unbeknownst to Liddell, the 100-meter race was scheduled to run on a Sunday. And as a brother of Christ in that era, he would have done what other Christian men would have also done, which is that he resolutely refused to run on the Lord's Day. Eric believed that God had determined that Sunday was the day of rest, and for him to run on that day wouldn't be able to violate the commandments of God. What made the movie even more dramatic was that no other than the Prince of Wales had been called in to convince Eric of his duty to his country. Eric remained unmoved, and as I said at the time, lots of Christians loved this movie. When it came out, I remember my dad and I remember other Christians saying, this is an awesome movie, not just because of the fact that this was a sports movie, but also because it was a movie celebrating a good Christian who stood up for his faith. And you know what's really interesting about that is, here's what I would say about that. Not many more North American Christians today probably would hold the same conviction about the Sabbath as Eric did. In fact, most Christians today would look at the story and they would probably have the opposite reaction to the story. They would actually see it as a form of legalism, And you know what? I was thinking about it, and I was thinking about the seventh day and the Sabbath day as we're reading this text, and I realized that there aren't very many Christian practices, there are a few, that can top the Sabbath in terms of shaping our North American culture, eh? I want you to think about this for a minute. The Sabbath and what we believe and what we've been taught and what we think about it has shaped the way that you and I live here in North America. For example, I'm 36 years old, and I remember some of the 80s, most of the 90s, and I remember living in Vancouver at that time, and Vancouver was a bustling, a robust, busy city, except on Sundays. Okay? Everything closed down on Sundays in Vancouver. But that all changed one day. I remember a man named Jim Pattison, which is a very wealthy businessman in Greater Vancouver, opened his grocery stores on Sunday. And here's what I remember very vividly, even as a young kid, is it wasn't just Christians that were upset with him. Everybody was upset with him. Atheists, Muslims, Sikhs, the whole city was upset. And what made it even worse was that Jim Pattison was considered an active Pentecostal. So a lot of people couldn't understand why he would go against his own convictions that way. I remember, what happened after that is Vancouver just kind of abolished all the kind of Sunday clothes laws. And so I kind of grew up all the way through the mid-90s and, you know, all early 2000s kind of thinking that Sunday was just a normal day. Okay? And then in 2004, I moved to Three Hills. Yeah. So you imagine my surprise when I'm like, all right, I'm going to get a steak. I'm going to get some hot dogs. Let me go to the IGA. And it's closed. Right? And it was just so weird for me to live in a town where that happened. Well, as I lived here and went to school here, I kind of got used to it and thought it was just this quaint little thing. And then I met Mary Liz, and then I moved to Winnipeg, where, wouldn't you know it, in 2011, they still had Sunday restriction laws, believe it or not. And they didn't actually abolish them till about 2013. In fact, if you go to Winnipeg today, there are still restrictions and laws in place for what can or cannot be opened on a Sunday. Okay? It has affected the way that you and I live our lives in a way that we think. It even affects us right down to the construction of our elevators. You want to hit the video for me, guys? Make sure the audio is on for this.
Some of the slowest elevators in the world can be found in hotels on Miami Beach.
We have Orthodox Jewish people coming here for the season, for all year round. So the question is, how do people get to their homes, get to their rooms on the Sabbath if you're on a high floor? Sleeping in the lobby is not a solution.
The problem is, for observant Jews, it is forbidden to ride an elevator on the Sabbath.
The Bible simply says we do not make a fire on the Sabbath. When you push the button and create electricity, you're creating a fire. The door opens, there's all types of electricity, all types of labors are being done, and therefore that would be forbidden on the Sabbath.
The other problem is the electric eye in the elevator door.
The electric eye detects your presence, opens those doors again. Uh-oh, your body has opened those doors. If we interfere with the electric eye, it's just as bad as pushing the button.
So the rabbis, together with technology and science, have come up with a solution where they create the Sabbath elevator where there's no need to push any buttons.
We do have a Shabbat elevator for our Jewish customer. Our maintenance staff, typically around 5:30 in the evening before the sun will set, will key the elevator where it goes straight to the rooftop, up to 17, and then we'll stop on every floor on the way down until it hits actually the basement level.
So there you go. And if you go to Israel today, you will in fact find a Shabbat elevator, an elevator specifically designed for use on Sundays, or Saturdays, my bad, where it stops on every floor because pushing a button is considered work, right? So my whole point in this is to bring up this idea that what we believe in our convictions about the Sabbath have shaped our culture in a very interesting way. So because of that, I think it's really important just to ask three questions, and this is what we're going to do today. We're going to ask, well, what is the Sabbath? How should we understand it in light of Jesus? So that's probably the big question, and suggestions on how to live that out. So let's look at our text this morning again, and turn to Genesis chapter 1, verse 31. And while you're taking there, I'm just going to say this, that Sabbath, in a nutshell, is a day where we remember, rest, and remember God. It's a day to rest and remember, and that's different than a day off. Let me explain this, and I'll show you the text real quick. A day off is different than the Sabbath. What do I mean by that? Well, simply this, is that when I think of a day off from work, I think of a catch-all day, a day where I can maybe rest, maybe potatoes and chips in the front of the TV. Maybe it's a day where I run errands. Maybe it's a day where I do the laundry. It's what a day where I kind of take everything that I couldn't get done during the week, and I get it done during that one day. And if I'm lucky, maybe I get a rest. That's what a day off is. That's very different from what we see God model in Scripture. And I'm going to suggest to you that here, I'm going to suggest to you why. Because what happens is God models and does four things on a Sabbath that is different, that makes it different than just a normal day off for us. So with that, let's read our text this morning. This comes from First Genesis chapter 31. Verse, can you hit the slide for me, guys? And this is what it says. And God saw that everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning on the sixth day. Hit it again for me, guys. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and the whole host of them. And on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all the work that he'd done. And then verse 3, I believe, says, it doesn't have verse 3. God says is that he takes the work, then he blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work he was creating that he had done. All right, so here's the deal. When you and I look at this passage of Scripture, the very first question that everyone asks is, why does God need to take a break? And a lot of people think, God must have been tired. And what I want to say to that is God, you shouldn't read it as that God comes along and he creates the universe and it's just sweaty and it's a lot of effort and he's exhausted and he just needs a coffee break. That's not what's going on here. When we read the creation account, we understand that what God is doing is he's creating with relative ease. All that he's doing is speaking. He's saying, let there be light, and there's light. He says, let there be stars, and there's stars. He says, let there be an atmosphere, and there's atmosphere. So what I'm trying to say is that God is creating with a sense of relative ease, and that God's work doesn't actually exhaust him. You and I are different in that regard, in that our work takes effort, right? And we get tired. And so what is God doing when he's resting? Well, here's what I'm going to say that he's doing. He's actually modeling for us a pattern of how to live. Right? He's modeling for us to do it. So this is what it is that we engage in activities on a Sabbath that restore us and replenish us. And so here's what I'm going to do. God does four things that are unique to a Sabbath that don't necessarily fall into a day off. And the first is I want to say that God stops. God stops. Okay? Genesis chapter 2, verse 1, thus the heavens and the earth were finished, the whole host of them. What does it mean to stop? It means to cease. Sabbath, first and foremost, is a day when we cease all work, paid and unpaid. On the Sabbath, we brace the idea that we are not like God and we have limits. So when we read of God resting, we should see that he is trying to model for us the way that you live. Okay? That is very, very important. God stops work. And I want you to think about that for a minute in light of the context of what we just read. That we just read the creation account, which is the creation of what? The whole world, the whole universe, okay? Every atom, every black hole, every planet, every wind gust on every planet that ever existed, every speck of dust that's on Mars, everything God creates in 6 days. I want you to think about that in relation to your job, okay? When you compare your work, no matter what it is, to his work, I kind of say that his work is way more important than yours, okay? Not saying that your work isn't important. I'm just saying that the creation of the universe is a big deal, right? And because it's a big deal, God actually stops. And I want to say to you, too, that models for us that no matter how important we think our job is, it should stop, right? We should stop. Number 2, God took time to rest. God could, number two, he could take time to rest. Verse two, and on the seventh day, God finished his work he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from his work and all that he'd done. God rested after his creation. What does it mean to rest? It means to cease engaging in strenuous activity for the purpose of restoration, reparation, or recovery of strength. Okay. Now, I'm going to explain this better as in light of what Jesus does, but I don't think that resting is a synonym for nothing. Okay, resting is not a synonym for nothing. What I think we need to understand is this requires rest from unpaid work too, which requires advanced planning. If you are to have any hope of enjoying the Sabbath, you need to set aside time to attend to the routine tasks of life that you won't do on the Sabbath. Paying bills, fixing something around the house, budgeting, etc. The third thing we see is that God actually delights. This comes from verse 31. And he saw that everything he had made, and behold, it was what? Very good. Very good. After finishing his work, God pronounced his work very good. This wasn't an afterthought, like, oh, well, I think this is nice. But it's a joyful recognition and celebration of something that he made. He's looking at it and saying, didn't I do a good job? And then the following day, he not only rests, he takes time to enjoy and delight in what he created. Okay? You know what's so interesting about that today? Some of us need to do that and remember that is you and I work so hard to create the lives that we want, the family that we want, the career that we want, the lifestyle that we want, that we don't actually take any time to enjoy what God has allowed us to create. And here we have a time where God actually sits back and stops and says, it's good, and he delights in it. And probably lastly, and probably the most important thing, is that God made a day holy. What makes the Sabbath different from a day off is that it's a day not only to rest, but remember, pondering the love of God. It's the central focus of the Sabbath. What makes Sabbath different from a day off is that it is a day holy to the Lord. We're not taking time off from God. We are drawing closer to God. And so that's sort of what he does. And so here's a short definition of the Sabbath for you again. And that's this, is that according to the Old Testament, Sabbath is a day's worth of time in which we stop work, we enjoy rest, we practice delight, and remember God. Okay? That's what he does. That's what he said. He stops, he rests, he delights in what he makes, and he makes it holy. Okay? As a pattern for the way that you and I are to live. Now, here's the cool part. As we go through the Old Testament, you will learn and understand that this is very important to God, because God makes the Sabbath part of what set of rules? The Ten Commandments. Okay? Now, I want you to think about this for a second. Okay? How cool is it that God commands you to rest? Isn't that cool? I want you to think about this in light of the context in which it was written. Okay? Genesis, Exodus, written by Moses. You all know that story. As God uses Moses to bring the people out of Israel, God gives Moses the Ten Commandments to the people, and the fourth most important one is, you are to take a day of rest. Now, I want you to think about that in light of who he's talking to. He's talking to the Israelites, a people for 400 years have worked every day, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, for a God, for a small g God. Backbreaking, intensive work. And then God comes along and says, hey, here are 10 rules that I want you to live by. The fourth one is, make a day of rest and make it holy. Isn't that cool? That's cool. They wouldn't have seen it as a legalistic thing. They would have seen it as a blessing. God commands us. Why does God command us to take a day off? Because we know that you and I are designed for work. Work is a good thing. It's not a result of the fall. What is the first thing that God tells Adam to do? He tells him to work the land, to take care of it, to name the animals. God creates work, and work is a good thing. But here's the thing, that some of us work so hard and so long to create the lives that we want that we don't stop and rest and delight in what God has created for ourselves. God knows that this can work, you work so hard for your career, for a good livelihood, or for your family, that you don't take time to stop and rest and delight in it. And God thought so highly about this that he made the rule that even if you disobeyed it, you died. That was what happened in the Old Testament. God took this very seriously. Okay? So that's what the Sabbath is. Okay? So we all know that. We all understand that. You know, it's a day's worth of time where we stop, where we rest, where we delight and remember God. But here's the question that we as Christians probably should try and figure out, and that's this, is how do we understand the Sabbath in light of Jesus? That's the big one, right? Do we follow the Sabbath today or not? That's sort of the big kind of thing that we're considering doing and not, and that's the one that's debatable. That's the one that we fight about. That's all this kind of thing. So what I want to try to do is I wanted to give you my best understanding of how we are to view the Sabbath in light of Jesus and grace. So for that, I want to turn to Romans chapter 14, verse 5, and I think that is a crucial verse for this. If you remember, this is a verse that we talked about back in January about learning how to respect each other with differing opinions on this. And it turns out that not only was food an issue for the Roman church, but also the Sabbath was. And particularly what the issue that was going on in the Roman church at this time was, which day do you celebrate the Sabbath? Because you remember what I told you about what happened? The gospel goes to Rome. The first people that accept the gospel are Israelites. They are practicing Jewish people. And the emperor bans all Jewish people from Rome. And so what's left is only Roman Christians, ethnic Christians. And so they practice they don't practice any of the Jewish things. And the Romans, or the Jewish Christians come back and they find out that all the Jewish practices that they have been around in the church aren't there. And one of them being food and the Sabbath being the other one. Okay? And this is what it says in verse 5 about that. One person esteems one day is better than the other, while another esteems all day alike. Each one should be fully convinced in all in their mind. And so what's going on here is Paul, there's an argument about where you should actually have the Sabbath or how it's practiced. And what Paul actually does here is he doesn't take a side. He doesn't take a side. And he just comes out and says that all days might be alike. Now, here's what I want you to catch. It's not that all days alike in that in fact they are secular. It's that all days are alike in which they are holy. And that's really important because those of us that might have a liberal view of the Sabbath I'm a little worried that you treat every day as secular and not holy. Meaning this, every day is a day for chips and pop in front of the TV instead of a day that's holy. Paul is saying that every day is holy to the Lord. This verse isn't a contrast between someone who believes in a day of rest and a person who doesn't believe in it. This is an issue between a person who observes the Sabbath on a specific day versus picking any day of the week to do it. Otherwise, having church on Sunday would be wrong for us. How do I know that? Because every day is alike and holy. I want you to look at this very carefully this morning. I want to just cursorily take you through the New Testament. According to Acts chapter 20, verse 7, it says this. It says, on the first day of the week, we gathered together to break bread. Paul talked with them, intending to depart on the next day, and he prolonged his speech on the marriage. Notice something very interesting here is that both here and Revelation 1:10, when John gives his vision, he says that I see the vision on the Lord's day. Notice something is that we see a change taking place in the early church. Okay? So they're not meeting on Saturday. They are on the end of the week. They're meeting on the first day. Okay. We see the same principle applied in, I think it's 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 2. Now concerning the collection of the saints, that is tithing, I directed the churches of Galatia that you are also to do on the first day of every week. Each of you is to set aside something aside and store it up as he may prosper so that there will be no collecting when I come. Why is he saying that we collect on the first day of the week? Answer is simple. That's the day that the church meets. Okay? And then on top of that, we have Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24, which says this, and let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together as we are in the some are in the habit, but encouraging one another as all the more as you see the day drawing near. And so what you actually see here is you actually see that the church is changing the day of the week that they are to meet, right? And if you want to know why, the best reason I can think of is that Sunday is the day that the Lord rose from the dead. So that's the day that the church meets. Okay? But I want you to see something very clear in that, is that the practice of the Sabbath still happens. The church still rests in worship. The principle of the Sabbath is still maintained, but it's now taken from its uniquely Jewish context. And the early church still practices the Ten Commandments, but they don't practice the fourth one in the uniquely Jewish way. Rather, they transform the Sabbath into the practice of the Lord's Day. And that's very interesting, because no practicing Jew would ever refer to the Sabbath as the Lord's Day. That is something new and that developed. So here's what I'm trying to say. Right from the get-go, you see that the early church takes the idea of the Sabbath and still employs it, but doesn't keep any of the Jewish traditions. What you're supposed to do, how you're supposed to work, all that kind of thing. Do you know that the Talmud, a central text of Judaism, identifies 39 different categories of activity prohibited on the Sabbath? If you were to go to Israel today and see a practicing Jew, you would probably see that there are no warm food served on the Sabbath. All food is made the day before. Driving your car would be frowned upon on the Sabbath. Encouraging the use of electric power would be preached. The more orthodox Jews would light candles, but since lighting candles is work, candles would be lit on the day on sundown on Friday night. And you know what? That's not unlike what life would be like in Jesus' day. If I understand Paul rightly on this issue, what he's saying is that we no longer need to celebrate Sabbath in the Jewish way, but God still requires it as a day of rest. Why? Because it was there in the created order before the law was ever given. Okay. We still honor the Sabbath, but we are no longer bound to the practices of Sabbath. Instead, we honor it in terms of the Lord's Day. Once a week is a pattern where God's people in the church cease from labor so we can worship. We take one day, to rest, stop, enjoy, and remember God. So I think you need to understand this, is that when we look at the Sabbath, we need to understand that it is God's way of blessing us, not something that we are a slave to. It's supposed to remind us of our goodness and that he loves us. I can't think of very many gods that command you to take a rest. And I think that's so cool that God does. There's great freedom in that. You don't have to worry about how many steps you need to take in a day or taking care of a sick animal. It doesn't have to be tied to a specific rule. All the older would have agreed with this, is that Christians are specifically to take a day of rest, but all the rules surrounding that would vary from other Christians. So, for example, what I mean by that is I know some Christians out there who say, I will not go to a restaurant on a Sabbath because that requires someone else to work. My grandpa wouldn't work on a Sabbath. But he would also go out. And I always thought, well, that's kind of weird. You're making someone else work. But the idea here is this, listen, we're all going to have different rules and different things about how we employ the Sabbath. And some of us actually might see some of them as legalistic. But if you look at Romans chapter 14, verse 3, we are not to pass judgment on someone else. Okay? Some of us are going to have stricter rules regarding the Sabbath, and others we're not. So why is it so hard? Well, I think it's because some of us feel guilty about doing nothing. I know friends that have grown up where their parents say, if you're not working, you know, it's not good. It's a sin. It's better to burn out than to rust out. So if they stop, they feel guilty, right? Some of us feel like there's an insecurity. Sabbath can be terrifying because nothing productive leaves us feeling vulnerable. Overworking hides these feelings of inadequacy or worthlessness, so we don't have to think about them. But when we take a Sabbath and we deal with those, and it's a day that's focused on more of God than the rest of the week would be, all those bigger issues come to the surface, and working means that I don't have to think about it. And lastly, I just think, we've had such a bad experience with it being legalistic. But I would say to you that even in Christ, that the early church, from the start till now, has always practiced the Sabbath in some form. And if work needs to be done on the Sabbath, it's a work of necessity. Okay? It's a work of necessity. Let me ask you a question. How are you dealing with a day of rest? Well, let me ask a few questions for you and just kind of gauge your heart. Number one, do you generally get more excited about work than your family or anything else going on? And probably dovetailed with that, is work the activity you like to best talk about the most? Okay? Now, I'm not saying talking about work is bad. I don't have any problem with that. You got to talk as much about work as you want. But do you enjoy it more than anything else that God has given you? Your family, your spiritual life? Be honest. Do you take on extra work because you're concerned the work won't get done? And lastly, have your long hours hurt your family or other relationships? You know, here's the thing, guys. It's really easy for me to spend so much time working as the pastor. Why? Because the work never stops. This is one of those jobs where it just goes and goes and goes and goes. And I can work really long hours. But you want to know something? If I do a bad job as your pastor, matter will survive. Eh? You'll just tell me to leave and you'll get another pastor. But if I do a bad job at my family, that's harder to come back from. It's not impossible, it's just harder. Does your work hurt your family? Well, if you've kind of wrestled with one of those questions, here's what I want you to do. I want you to take some time either by yourself or with your spouse and just ask the question, do I need to employ the work of the Sabbath, the day of the practice of the Sabbath, a little more than I usually do? You might have to consider that. And how do you mimic that? Well, I'm going to give you, in conclusion, I'm just going to give you a number of ways that you do it. And that's simply this, is that you mimic your Sabbath after God's rest. And here's what I'm going to suggest. So number one is I think you should stop. You need to pick a 24-hour block of time to stop working, both paid and unpaid. And here's what I would do. With that, I'm going to ask you to make two questions. Number one, what will make the day of rest different from the rest from your business as usual? Just sit down. What is going to happen on the Sabbath that is different from the rest? Number two, what do you need to stop doing or doing on the Sabbath? Okay? For me, I stop on Friday. And everything related to manor stops on Friday. I don't do any preaching. I don't do any phone calls. I don't do any emails. I do nothing on Friday. I even take off social media because social media is related to my work. And I just stop. That's what's happened to me. Number two, I'm going to ask you to rest. And here's what I mean by rest. is that we engage in activities that replenish us for another week of service in the Lord. You hear that? Rest means that you take time to replenish yourself for another week. So here's what I'm going to say. If you have a job where it's back-breaking work, you're on the farm, or you're doing something, it's physical labor, then a day of rest for you might include a nap. If you have a job where you sit at a desk all day and do nothing except type on a keyboard, your Sabbath might include some sort of physical activity. Might be wise. All right? Engage in activities that rest and restore you. Number three, I would ask you to delight. That you take time to enjoy the life that God has created for you. Your spouse, your kids, your home, right? Just take time in your life to reflect on that day and say that it is good. And lastly, this is probably the most important, I would say, is that you take time to make it holy. And remember that Jesus is the source of your rest. Okay? Set aside time during the week, more time during the week than you would normally do, or more time during the day than you would normally during the week, to spend time with God. So in other words, if you do a 15-minute daily bread devotional, consider spending half an hour or 45 minutes just in prayer and worship on that day. And take inventory of your week. Just spend some time. You know what I like to do is I like to do a weekly inventory and a yearly inventory. God, what have you been doing in my life this week? And I think about all that's happened that week, and I just kind of say, God, what are you trying to teach me? And then I do that yearly too. Why don't you do something like that? Take some time to consider it holy. Okay? Take some extra time to pray. Take some extra time to journal. Right? Do something that shows that you are working on your relationship with God to make it holy. It's a good time for that. It's a great time. Gather with God's people. Now, here's what I'm going to say, and I'll close it off with this. Like, I know that there are some situations that make it hard for us to do this, and so I'm going to give you a few suggestions on how to do that. And remember that this isn't gospel. This is just Dan. And I would say this is, number one, if you have a job where you have to work every day and that there's stuff that needs to get done every day and it can't get done, I'm going to give you two possible ways to deal with that. Number one, could you possibly get someone to cover for you and then switch, right? Is that a possibility? So you take Sunday off and then the other person covers for you and the other person works, takes Monday off. The reason I say that is because every day is holy, I think we can pick which day the Sabbath is for us, okay? Me personally, it's Friday. I work Sunday. My day doesn't begin and end on Sunday with the service. It goes from 8 and it goes all the way to 6 or 7. So I need another day. It can't be today. And so here's what I'm going to say is that if that's you and you're in that situation, could you get someone to cover? If you can't get someone to cover, I think Mark chapter 2, verse 22, where Jesus kind of goes into the fields and picks grain for himself, gives you the license to say this. Any work that must be done on the Sabbath or that day of rest is something out of necessity. Okay? I do believe that. Okay? But there's grace in that, right? Because Jesus does it a few times, actually. Like, and so how do you gauge what's necessity or not? Well, I think that's something you and the Lord are going to have to work between. But I'm going to say this. If no one's going to die because you didn't do the work that day, that's probably not a thing of necessity, right? So that's what I would do. So, guys, I think it's really important to remember that what I've been trying to do this past few weeks is I've been trying to show you a world in which God, a better world, a world that where you thrive, a world where you have value, a world where you have no shame, and a world where you can rest and delight in God. And the key thing I want you to remember is this, is that Jesus is the source of our rest. And it was what he did on that cross 2,000 years ago that makes us come to the place where we can come and take this offering, or remember what he did for us, where we can rest, where our source of rest isn't just the idea that we're taking a rest from work. It's rest in that we are no longer God's enemies, but we can rest and find help in him. I'm going to ask the community helpers to come this morning to help me with this.